I have a question for you, and I want you to be brutally honest with yourself.
Okay.
When you woke up this morning and you reached for your phone before your feet even hit the floor, what was the very first physical sensation you felt? Was it excitement, a sense of calm anticipation for the day, or was it a shallow, tight knot right in the center of your chest?
I think if we looked at the data, for the vast majority of modern professionals, it's the knot.
It is the knot. It's that visceral reaction to seeing the notifications stacking up on the lock screen. It's the inbox that's already overflowing before 7:00 a.m. It's the feeling that you are already late to a race you didn't even know you signed up for.
It's a very specific, very modern type of anxiety. And the source material we are diving into today actually has a clinical sounding name for it. They call it infobesity.
Infobesity. It is such a striking term. It sounds like a medical condition, and honestly, the way the sources describe it, it acts like
It
one.
really does.
It clogs the arteries of an organization. So, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are unpacking the philosophy of the brief lab.
And to set the stage properly, I want to be clear about what this is not. This isn't just a guide on how to write shorter emails or, how to talk less.
That's what I initially thought. I thought we were looking at like a style guide or a grammar lesson.
No, this is much deeper. The Brief Lab is arguing that in this world of infobesity, concise communication isn't just a nice-to-have soft skill.
Not a soft skill.
Not at all. They frame it as an elite communication standard.
An elite standard, meaning this is what separates the people who drown in the noise from the people who actually lead through it.
Exactly. Their central premise, and this is the thread that runs through everything we're going to discuss, is that the ability to be brief, to cut through the noise, is the defining characteristic of professional leadership today.
It's a survival mechanism.
It is. If you cannot synthesize complexity into clarity, you become part of the problem.
And what I appreciate about this stack of research is that we are going to get very tactical. We aren't just going to complain about having too many meetings.
Right.
We are going to look at why we communicate this way, the structural reasons behind it, and then look at the toolkit. We'll talk about brief maps, the quiet works paradox, and how to stop spreading anxiety with your text messages.
It's a really comprehensive look at how we work now and why it's fundamentally broken.
So let's start with the core problem, the enemy. Because you can't fight what you can't name.
Right.
The source material has a blog post with a title that does not pull any punches. It's titled, "Confusion is a Business Killer."
Note the language there. Not confusion is annoying. Not confusion is a waste of time. A killer.
That seems a little dramatic, doesn't it? I mean, if I send a confusing email, surely the worst case scenario is someone has to email me back and ask for clarification. Is it really a killer? See, that's the trap we fall into. We tend to measure the cost of bad communication in minutes. We look at the clock and say, oh, that took 2 minutes to read that rambling email. But the source argues that the real price isn't minutes, it's clarity.
Okay, let's unpack that distinction. How does confusion kill the business?
Well, when you confuse people, you aren't just wasting their time, you are stalling decisions.
Okay.
You are derailing major initiatives. Think about the silent friction that occurs when a team leaves a meeting and nobody is 100% sure what the next step is.
Oh, I know that feeling. Everyone sort of nods, walks out, and then freezes. Or they retreat to their desks and do busy work because they don't know what the actual work is.
Precisely. They do nothing, or worse, they do the wrong thing. That is where the killer part comes in. It kills momentum, it kills alignment.
And the bottom line.
And eventually, it kills the bottom line because you're paying for movement, not progress. To illustrate just how bad this has gotten, the Brief Lab uses an assessment tool and the criteria they track. It's like reading a list of symptoms for a nervous breakdown.
It is.
They are tracking the metrics of distraction.
It really paints a bleak picture of the modern workday. It's a diagnostic for the struggle we're all living in.
They ask you to track things like the number of times per hour you check your email.
Which, let's be real, for many of us, it's compulsive. It's a twitch. We do it without thinking.
Or the average interruptions per day, the shrinking attention span measured in seconds, and the sheer volume of times we check our phones.
And while the source doesn't give us the global averages here, the implication is clear. We are being bombarded.
Constantly.
And because we are bombarded, we start to panic. We start trying to clear the deck as fast as possible.
That leads to a concept in the text that I found really convicting. They call it spreading anxiety.
This is a huge concept, and it's one that requires a bit of self-reflection.
The phrase they use is, texting and email spreading anxiety, confusion, and infobesity. I think we've all been on the receiving end of this.
Oh, absolutely.
You know the scenario. You get a text from your boss. It's 8:00 p.m. It's 3 paragraphs long. It's rambling. It's vague.
Mm-hmm.
It ends with something like thoughts.
And your heart rate spikes immediately.
Immediately. Because I don't know what they want. I'm trying to decode it like it's the Rosetta Stone. Is she mad? Is this urgent? Do I need to do this now?
Right.
I'm not working on the problem. I'm working on deciphering the request.
That is spreading anxiety. You are taking your own disorganized thoughts and dumping them onto someone else.
You are outsourcing your confusion.
Exactly. Instead of doing the work to clarify your thought, you transmit the chaos to your team.
That's a heavy realization. We think we are keeping people in the loop, but we are actually just polluting their mental space.
And this brings us to what I think is the most uncomfortable truth in the source material.
Okay.
There is a blog post titled, "Your Boss Doesn't Have Time for You."
Yeah, I read that and I felt a little defensive. It feels dismissive, like I'm too important for you.
It feels personal, right? But the expert voice in the text, Joe McCormack, is arguing that it is not personal, it is structural.
Structural.
And this is crucial for anyone trying to advance their career to understand.
Unpack that for us. How is it structural?
Well, look at how organizational charts have changed over the last 20 years. Companies have flattened.
Right. We wanted to get leaner. We wanted to be agile.
We did. But what that means practically is that leaders now have a massive span of control. You have more people reporting directly to fewer leaders.
So your boss's bandwidth has physically shrunk.
It has. They are managing more direct reports than ever before.
So they literally do not have the time to wade through a 5-page update, even if they wanted to. It's not that they don't like me. It's that they don't have the cognitive capacity.
Exactly. It's a math problem.
Hmm.
If a leader has 15 direct reports and everyone sends a thorough update, that leader is buried. They are paralyzed. So when I send that long email to show my work.
Which is what we were taught to do in school, right? Show your work, get the grade.
Exactly. In this context, you're actually hurting your reputation.
You might be the problem.
You might be. The source says that updating key people often leaves them more confused than confident. You aren't proving you're working hard. You're proving you can't synthesize the information.
You become a burden to their bandwidth.
You do. It's a massive paradigm shift.
Mm.
We have to unlearn to show your work instinct.
We have to move from an effort-based communication style.
Look how hard I tried.
To an outcome-based one. Here's what you need to know.
Exactly.
So let's pivot to the solution. We know the enemy is confusion. We know the boss is drowning. The Brief Lab proposes this elite standard. But I want to challenge this a bit.
Please.
Is brief always better? Isn't there a risk of oversimplifying things? If I'm dealing with a complex engineering problem, I can't explain it in a tweet.
That is a great question, and it's one the source addresses directly. They aren't saying dumb it down. They are saying clear it up.
What's the difference?
The core philosophy here is brevity equals better thinking.
Brevity equals better thinking.
Think about it. It is actually very easy to write a long, rambling document. You just type as you think.
It's stream of consciousness.
It takes very little cognitive effort to just spill everything you know onto the page. But to take that complex engineering problem and distill it down to its absolute essence, to explain the core issue and the solution in 3 minutes, that requires a profound understanding of the subject matter.
So if you can't say it briefly, you probably don't understand it well enough.
Exactly. It's an operational strategy. The Brief Lab lists 4 very specific benefits if you can master this standard.
Okay, walk us through those.
First, and this is the obvious one, you reduce time spent in the inbox and in meetings.
The efficiency gain. Get your day back.
Which we all want. Second, you make faster decisions based on consistent information. If the info is brief and clear, the decision comes quicker.
That makes sense. If the proposal is clear, I can say yes or no immediately. If it's muddy, I have to schedule another meeting.
Third, you develop consensus that encourages follow-through. This is interesting. People are more likely to agree with something they actually understand.
That is profound, actually. I'm thinking about how many times I've said, let's circle back or put a pin in it, just because I didn't fully get what was being asked and I didn't want to look stupid.
Yes. Complexity breeds hesitation. Clarity breeds consensus. And the fourth benefit, reducing rework caused by lack of clarity.
Oh, the rework. That is the soul-crushing part of corporate life. Doing it twice because the instructions were muddy.
There's a testimonial in the source from Nikki B. at Erie that really highlights the emotional shift here.
Okay.
She says, I'm more intentional than I've ever been.
Intentional. I like that word in this context.
She notes that this training brought awareness.
Yeah.
And I think that's key. Most of us are sleepwalking through our communication.
Really reacting.
Just reacting. Ping comes in, ping goes out. This standard forces you to wake up and ask, why am I sending this?
Hmm.
What is the point? What is the ask?
It's moving from being a reactive communicator to a proactive one.
Precisely.
Okay, so we're sold on the philosophy. We want to be elite. We want to stop the rework. How do we actually do it?
Well, the source material outlines a sort of toolkit for this.
Mm-hmm.
It covers the big three areas where we suffer most. Meetings, writing, and this one surprised me. Silence.
Let's start with the meetings. Because the source has a blog post with a title that made me laugh and cry at the same time. 5 Flaws That Sabotage Meetings.
And how to fix them, thankfully.
Yes, thank goodness. It says, let's be honest, most meetings are a mess, which is the truest statement I've read all week.
We dread them. They consume our calendars and produce nothing. They are often just zombie meetings that refuse to die.
So what is a brief meeting? Is it just a short meeting? Okay, guys, 10 minutes, go.
Not necessarily. The goal isn't just speed, it's impact. The source is very specific here. The goal is to run shorter, meaningful meetings that lead to action.
Action, not just sharing.
Right. How many meetings have you been in where the purpose is just updates? Let's go around the horn.
And everyone tunes out until it's their turn to speak.
That is a waste of corporate resources. A brief meeting has a clear objective, a clear decision to be made, and clear next steps.
If you walk out of a meeting and nobody knows what to do next, that wasn't a meeting.
That was a hostage situation.
A hostage situation with mediocre coffee. Okay, so brief meetings focus on action. Then we have brief writing.
The mantra is, write concisely so people will read.
It sounds so simple, but the source points out this irony. We write because we want to be understood, but we write so much that we guarantee we won't be read.
It's the paradox of effort again. We think that by adding more words, more background, more context, we are adding value.
But you're not.
But in an infobese world, value comes from subtraction. It's about respecting the reader's time enough to do the hard work of editing before you hit send.
And that leads us to the third tool, which I think is the most fascinating and counterintuitive one.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Quiet Works.
Quiet Works for brief teams. This is where it gets really interesting. The source asks the question, no time for quiet to prepare a clear and concise message.
And that's the kicker.
It is. To be brief is actually harder than being long-winded. It takes preparation.
It reminds me of that old quote usually attributed to Twain or Pascal. I would have written you a shorter letter, but I didn't have the time.
Exactly. The Brief Lab is pointing out that you cannot have an elite communication standard if you don't have quiet time.
A pause before the transmission.
You need to sit, think, synthesize, and then speak.
But let's play devil's advocate here. In a modern open plan office, or even on Slack, if I'm just sitting there staring at the wall thinking, it looks like I'm not working.
Right. We have this pressure to be constantly active.
And that is the trap. That is the hamster wheel. We equate activity with productivity.
But they're not the same thing. Sending 50 confused emails is activity. Sending one clear email that solves the problem is productivity.
So Quiet Works is giving yourself permission to disconnect.
It's a prerequisite for clarity. If you skip the quiet, you send the confusion. You have to break the cycle of immediate response.
If you skip the quiet, you send the confusion. That should be printed on every laptop in corporate America.
And just to round out the toolkit, they also mentioned something called BELT.
The BELT.
The Brief Experiential Learning Technique. And I have to quote the source here because it's funny.
Go for it.
They say, learning doesn't have to be so lame, which implies that most corporate training is, in fact, quite lame.
Painfully lame. PowerPoint death marches. But it seems like they are emphasizing that brevity is a muscle.
It is.
You can't learn it by just listening to us talk about it.
Yeah, which is vital. You can't learn to be brief by listening to a 3-hour lecture on brevity. You have to practice it, you have to fail at it, realize you're rambling, and try again.
So does this actually work? We have the theory, infobesity is the disease, clarity is the cure, we have the tools. But when the rubber meets the road, does brevity actually win?
The sources are full of success stories, but there are a few that really stand out because they show the stakes involved. Let's talk about the brief map.
This seems to be their flagship tool.
Yes. Ivan B. from Takeda calls it a very useful tool, not just for professional activities, but for day-to-day situations in life.
I can imagine using a brief map to negotiate with my toddler.
It might work, but we haven't defined it yet. Based on the context, the brief map seems to be a visual way to force your argument onto a single page.
A one slider.
Right. It forces you to map out who is the audience, what is
Yes.
the one thing I need them to know, and what is the one thing I need them to do.
And the story that really grabbed me was David L. from the Honor Foundation. This is a classic aha moment.
Set the scene for us.
So, David had an interview with the CEO. High stakes. You do not want to waste a CEO's time.
Absolutely not. A CEO's time is the most expensive resource in the building.
David decides to test drive the philosophy. He builds what he calls a one slider using the brief map to present a business opportunity. Just one single slide.
That's a bold move. Most people would bring a 20-slide deck just to feel safe.
Look how much work I did, exactly. He stripped away the safety blanket. And the result,
What happened?
he says it landed awesome with the
It
CEO.
landed awesome. And why? Because CEOs appreciate time more than money. By showing up with a one slider, David didn't just show he had a good idea, he showed he respected the CEO's bandwidth.
He spoke the CEO's language. He demonstrated the elite standard right there in the
We
room.
showed I can synthesize this so you don't have to.
And it's not just for pitches. We have Roger D. from the U.S. Army Reserve.
A military example. He says he's been implementing these principles for a year and has seen significant improvement in strategic communication and messaging.
And if anyone knows about the need for clear orders, it's the military. Confusion on the battlefield is a lot worse than confusion in a boardroom.
The stakes are incredibly high. Fog of war is real. If your orders are rambling, people get hurt. But the principle is the same in business.
And the feedback reflects that people are actually hungry for this. They aren't annoyed by the brevity. They are relieved by it.
Michelle O from JLL mentions that this training received the most positive feedback she had ever seen. And she adds, "And I've seen a lot of feedback."
That tells me something important about the employee. People are tired of the noise. They're tired of the bad meetings.
They're desperate.
When someone comes in and says, "I can teach you how to cut through this," it's like giving water to someone in a desert.
It is. We are drowning in information, but starving for wisdom, and brevity bridges that gap.
So what does this all mean for us? For the person listening to this deep dive right now, staring at their phone, feeling that knot in their chest.
It means that the way you communicate is a choice, and it's a choice you make 50 times a day. You can choose to add to the infobesity, to be another notification that creates anxiety, or you can choose to be the person who brings clarity.
Clarity is a superpower.
It really is.
Yeah.
In a noisy world, the person who speaks clearly is the one who gets heard.
And the one who gets the yes from the CEO.
Exactly.
Before we wrap up, I want to leave the listener with something to chew on. We talked about that blog post, "Your Boss Doesn't Have Time for You."
Yes, the structural issue.
I want to challenge everyone to think about that next time a meeting gets rescheduled.
That's a great point. If you walk into a meeting and it gets bumped or rescheduled or cut short, it's easy to blame the calendar.
Oh, they're just busy.
But ask yourself, is it a signal? Is your communication style fitting this new, flatter organizational structure?
Ooh.
If you had a reputation for being incredibly brief, incredibly valuable, and always to the point, would they have rescheduled?
Ooh. That stings a little bit. That's the mirror check.
It should sting. It's a provocative thought. Are you updating people or are you just confusing them? Because if you're confusing them, you are easy to reschedule. You are noise. If you are clarifying things, you become indispensable.
That is the takeaway right there. Don't be noise, be indispensable.
Be brief.
So here is your mission, should you choose to accept it. Before you send that next email or before you walk into that next meeting, take a minute.
Just a minute.
Do a little quiet works. Ask yourself, can I say this in half the words? Can I make this a one slider?
Your boss will thank you. And honestly, your own brain will thank you.
Stop the infobesity. Thanks for diving in with us today.
It's been a pleasure.
Catch you next time.